Running a call center is tough. Leading a sales team is a challenge. Luckily, your hosts know what it takes to succeed. What you can expect from your two guides? Conversations that won't be overly scripted. Definitely not salesy or boring. Just filled with as much value as possible. Each week, Jason and Oliver will bring you topics to help scale your team, increase profits, and actually feel like you are winning. So, if you are ready to up your game and become the best in the business, tune in, take notes, and be prepared to learn. And here they are with another episode of Call Center Confidence. It's Jason Cutter and Oliver Katt.
What's going on, everybody? Happy Wednesday as usual, Mr. Oliver. You're looking very sharp, very bright today, and I'm looking very fancy with my background is back. We are back, baby. What's going on? How are you today? Let's start off with that.
Hey, I'm very good, Mr. Cutter. Very good indeed. Thank you. How are you? You good? Everything good?
I am good. Living the life. Things are always fascinating, always fun, always interesting, always in a state of something's going on, always creative things, always good stuff. Good. So here we are. This is episode week 14 of the Call Center Confidence with Cutter and Katt. For people tuning in, welcome. Make sure to say hi in the comments. Let us know where you're from. We got people listening all over the world, different contingents following Mr. Oliver, following me, other people we haven't met yet that are tuning in. So please just drop a comment, say hello, especially before we dive into stuff that is probably going to trigger some people today, maybe make people tune out. I don't know. But let's all be friends to start before things get real. And here we are, Mr. Ryan Butler, the great connector, the one who actually brought us together and introduced us to each other last year, is saying hi. He's tuning in.
Mr. Butler,
intro how you doing? To the podcast. We appreciate you, Ryan. We miss you. Be great to chat. We should probably have you just come on the show at some point, maybe a special guest.
I was going to say, I think we both reached out to him, Ryan. He's just been too busy to speak to us, you know. He set up the awesome duo and then just sayonara.
And then they left. That's all right. That's what some people do. They just connect and then they move on and they plant seeds and they move on. Like the great David Meltzer says, you know, it's all about planting seeds for trees that you'll never sit under. And so you just never know where things are going to go, which is why don't you give us some updates from your side? It's always fun while people are kind of tuning in, getting caught up, maybe grabbing a beverage while they enjoy some Call Center Confidence. Give us some updates on the operational side of the show.
No, absolutely. First of all, evening, Rich, evening show. How you doing? Welcome, to the show, this afternoon, or this evening, depending on or this morning, wherever you're actually listening from. But some big, big, big updates. So first of all, the website has been updated, callcenterconfidence.com, spelled the American way. On there, we've got all your
previous episodes. We do have both, by the way. We do need to set up the other one for you and your group.
Yeah, Rich, we got you covered, buddy. Don't worry. We're going to spell center with an R-E. We're good. That's going to be pointed at the existing one. Website's live with reminders, so you can register for mailing lists. You can register for the live episodes. You can get emails with links. It's all automated, which is fantastic. So that's the great thing. The other news is our registration site has been updated as well, which is Luma / Call Center Confidence. So LU.MA, Call Center Confidence. Go on to there and you can register today. And you don't even have to worry about it. It takes you straight to the website. You can watch it live. And you haven't even got to bat an eyelid to do it. We've got people watching from the UK and the US on the website right now looking at the stats. So thank you very much, viewers. That's always great to see. We've got Caribbean as well watching, Eastern Caribbean, Northern Caribbean. Everybody is tuning in today. It's a great day. And we got some big news, some very big news for those of you that are watching now, for those of you that are listening live post. Oh, you don't just have to go on the website. You don't just have to go to YouTube. You don't even got to go to Instagram. Mr. Cutter in the background has been pedaling away, smashing it out of the park this week, because officially, and Jason, I'll let you crack out this news right here. Go for it.
We talked about it for feels like forever. We threatened to put this into podcast form and turn it into that and make it available for replays easily at scale. And we have done it, ladies and gentlemen. We are officially on the podcast broadcast platform. So Call Center Confidence with Cutter and Katt is now available on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Amazon podcast, which a lot of people don't realize they have podcasts on there too. There it is. Mr. Oliver is showing off the goods. When what happens with the other podcasts I've done is once it's on those platforms, it just spreads and it's available everywhere. So by the time you are watching the replay of this, it's everywhere. By the time you're listening to it on a podcast, that's awkward because you already know about it on the podcast. So it's like one of those Inception things where it's inside the inside. Like, I don't know. But yeah, so make sure to subscribe, make sure to share it with other people you know in the call center space. Also, if you're listening to this and if you're a fan of podcasts, definitely subscribe and download. That helps it spread out. If you're not a huge fan of podcasts, but you want to support us, go into like iTunes is the best one and leave a rating and a review. That helps other people to find it. If you've ever listened to podcasts, you hear people talk about that all the time. That would be the biggest thing. So we can move on, move that up and just kind of spread this out there. And really, again, the main reason we do this, because we don't charge, it's currently not sponsored, although we're open for that, is to give back to the community and just help in general. Just give away the best that we can, support everyone in the best ways that we can, you know, because we just have fun. Anybody who's tuning in. So, Rich, thanks for subscribing. Trisha, welcome to the show. Thanks for tuning in. And so, yeah, that's the big announcement. Make sure to check it out.
Man, I got to say, for a second now, I thought you were going in one direction when you were like, you know, into support us. I thought you were just going to drop up like PayPal subscription at the bottom. You know, don't
not yet.
Donate here, you know, help us pay the bills and keep the lights on. You know, it's all good. But no, as Jason said, some big news, some big moves forward. And look, we'll keep it nice and short on that because we've got so much content to get through today. It's going to be ridiculous. And today, I don't know why I've got a sneaking suspicion that we are going to be running into a two-part episode on this one. So again, it's good that you got iTunes or Spotify or any of the other platforms because you can just pick it up in the car. I actually plugged my phone into the car and it came up on the dashboard yesterday. And I was like, oh, we're online. It's great. It's good. I feel like a celebrity, but we're not. Yeah. So anyway, right. Jumping straight into this one, straight off the bat, it's the post we've been talking about last week. It's the topic that's on the screen right now, and that is managing managers who don't manage or who can't manage or who struggle to manage. We spoke about it briefly at the end of last week's show, Jason, didn't we? And, you know, we were talking about how we move from performance plans and development plans into these types of environment, especially in a call center, when we've got managers that can't manage. How do we manage them? How do we deal with them? And I think it's one of the biggest topics that either people know how to deal with because they're a senior director, C-suite, VP, whatever it might be. And as far as they're concerned, it's like, well, let's just get them out the door and replace them. Or it's somebody who's mid-level management who doesn't know how to manage their supervisor, their team leader, who's running the front line with their teams. Now, as much as they're two very different scenarios, at the same time, it's very difficult to lead by example and to get it right every time. So, Jason, jumping straight into this. This is a big topic for you. I know, obviously, you're very passionate about it, like me, because, you know, we do our sales, we do our leadership training, and it all boils down to one thing. And remember, you know, the best performing team is the best team with the best sales manager. And if they're not managing, we're sinking. We're not swimming. So what are your thoughts on this topic? Where do you want to go? Where do you want to kickstart in that direction?
Well, I think one big thing is you've got to set up the game for success for everybody within the organization. So I think mm-hmm. that's one of the important things, right? So, you know, the assumption here is, okay, managing managers who can't manage, which I didn't practice that all week to say it, but I feel like I should just to be ready, is that, you know, the first response, like you said, is it the manager? Are they the wrong person? Did we promote the wrong person? Because let's just assume, which is the standard process, is they were a salesperson. They got moved up maybe to a team lead supervisor. Now they're manager, wherever they are in the hierarchy. And so you assume it's them. Maybe they're not the right person. Like in professional sports, blame the coach when the team's losing. You know, we covered that a lot last week. For me, though, it's about setting up the game for everyone to be able to win. And then also everyone's playing the same game. In a lot of the organizations I've seen and some that I've worked with, they have KPIs and parameters for sales. And then they have a different parameter or KPI for the manager that the manager is supposed to be leading to and guiding the team to. And if those aren't in alignment, So the salespeople are going one direction. The manager is going in a slightly different direction or has a slightly different priority. Then it somebody will lose because people can't win, right? Like if you're going different directions. So I think one of the first things is just to do an audit as an organization to ensure that everyone is going the same direction. Whatever the KPI, the accountability parameters and the bonus parameters, the requirements, the rules of the game for the salespeople should just filter up and up. Obviously spread out, right? If salespeople have to do two sales a day, then the manager should be held to that average and then what they're looking for, but that should be what they can control. So I think that's the biggest first step in this is at least making sure the game is set, because otherwise it becomes what we've talked about in the past, which is this subjective. Like, I don't like Bob. I don't think Karen is doing a good job. It's like, how though? How are you judging them? And what game are they supposed to be playing? Where do you see with that? Like, companies doing it well or not well?
Do you know what? From where I stand, I've been lucky enough to work with a lot of centers that actually don't have to deal with something like this because they've actually got a lot of strategic processes in place to help deal with them. They roadmap everything out as well. So, you know, they're managing their agents at KPI level, they're managing their managers at KPI level, and they're filtering down. I have worked with some clients that have had an issue with a one or two here or there, nothing really in the mainstream. And they have ended up putting them on pips, which is what we kind of spoke about last week. And again, what we spoke about last week is how they've gone on a pip, they've smashed their pip, they've exceeded their targets, and then they've kind of gone back into their old ways. So, you know, it's that vicious cycle going on. But going back to what I've seen, I think the two or three-ish companies that I've worked with that have had struggles in that area, I've ended up coaching with the manager's manager or coaching with the exec team on how to deal with that situation. Whereas, as you say, not to make it, you know, pointing fingers at Bob or whoever because I don't like them or whatever, we've had to really dive down into the maybe the underlying psychological reasons behind everything as to why things aren't working and how to improve those areas. And it's not just a case of, you know, we need to manage Bob because Bob doesn't speak to Jason that way, or he shouldn't speak to Jason that way. It's not, again, it's not just simple things like that. It's making sure that his sales team are performing. That's what we're looking at. So as far as I'm concerned, I'm a big advocate, and I know a lot of people listening out there are the same advocate. The same saying is, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. And that's how they've been dealing with their managers. And that's the coaching that I've dealt with. And I've not made it about how they're doing it or the why. It's about, you know what, we need to look back at the numbers because the numbers will show you the results. And I think that's something that stands out with a lot of the companies. So like I said, I know how to do it. I know how to come out of it. I've been very lucky enough that I haven't had to deal with it on a one-on-one. What about you? What are the clients, some of the people you've worked with, how have you helped them in that instance, or have you been lucky like me?
Mostly lucky. I mean, usually it's just a little bit of alignment. You know, what I've seen mostly is just no alignment and no rules in place other than the big metric, right? It's like, we just need sales, we need revenue. And then the challenge is, how do you get there? And what are people doing? You know, incentivized, how are they playing their own game? When you just say, hey, here's Monopoly, your goal is to get as much money as possible and win. Go. Then it's like, okay, you and I are going to do things completely different, like if there's just no rules. And so usually what I see is just a lack of guidance, a lack of the guardrails to keep people in place. I think the biggest thing, though, and this is what we've talked about ad nauseum with the training, which we did, which we talk about a lot because it's so important and it's usually missing so badly in organizations, is that fundamentally remember, people perform and have in their life and work and do what they do in their life that matches exactly what they know or what they feel that they're capable of, right? Like everything you have in your life is a result of what you do and who you are and what you believe. And so if you want more in your life, you have to shift. You have to believe that you can get more. You have to learn how to get more. Like whatever that is, if you want to learn more things, you want to make more money, you want to start a business, Like if you've never done that before, you've got to figure it out. And it's either going to come through the school of hard knocks or it's going to come through a coach or a mentor. And so a lot of times, and we talked about this before, I see a lot of managers who are struggling to manage because they just hit their ceiling. They don't know what they don't know. And that's where like a lot of the organizations I work with have me come in, and I'm sure they do the same thing with you, to mentor and coach that manager. Just help my manager manage. I don't need sales training sometimes. I just like help this person get to the next level and see things differently. That's one of the biggest things. And this is where one of the questions I always ask companies when I'm starting to chat with them and they tell me what the issues are. Let's say it's with a manager. They're not sure. I was like, how much are you giving to that manager? How much resources are you putting into that person? Or are you expecting them to just know it all and do it all? Yeah. And is that fair?
Yeah. Do you know what? And you're right. And I want to touch on a point where you kind of went in there and you said about going in there to coach the managers and work with those managers. I think one thing that I train out specifically in my coaching workshops for managers is what they call the conscious competence learning matrix. And it's the things that are unknown unknowns, known unknowns, unknown knowns, and known knowns. The four different stages out there. For anybody, I'm not going to go into detail about it because I could talk about it for about an hour. Kill this session completely. But what I will say is check out the conscious competence learning matrix. And the reason why I talk about that is the four stages of the eureka moment where you go in there and you don't know what you don't know. It's quite rightly is what you just said a minute ago, all the way through until it becomes conscious and it just happens. You know it because you do it because you've done it for so long. And what I do is I actually take the managers through that process, because unfortunately for some, and more than not, when managers are hired or when external hires are brought in, their manager expects a certain level of experience and knowledge. That's what people are brought in on. And when it comes to something like that, in my opinion, unfortunately, senior leaders assume that everybody's already at stage two and they miss off the stage one, which is filling in the blanks, telling them, what they don't know or what they don't expect to know further down the line. And I think that's where those gaps actually come from. And what happens is when they come in, they get put in their training, they get put in their onboarding, which we've spoken about many, 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 many times. And luckily, some managers do get training in companies. Thankfully, when they come in at that, they go into stage two and they get brought all the way up to speed to stage four. But there are holes, and those holes that you're talking about, Jason, that you kind of referenced a minute ago in a different way, are the stage one gaps that we've not covered. And I think it's clear to say for anybody listening to this, I don't even know what that means. Do not assume that everybody knows where you are going, that you're all on the same bus, you're all headed in the right direction, if you haven't covered off the basics. Cover off the basics, put them at stage one, even if they are experienced, because all of a sudden, they'll start to get on the bus, they'll start to get on the journey, and when it comes to these gaps, they won't exist because you've covered everything off. And I think start from stage one, learn the matrix, understand how it works, and maybe we do a session on that further down the line. But make sure you start from scratch. And that way you won't have to manage a manager who doesn't manage. Well, I can't even say it. I've not had enough coffee today. trying to say something deep and meaningful and it's just stumbling over my words today. And that's the benefit of live TV, I guess. But go through that. And this is advice to anybody, is start at the beginning. And you won't ever have to get to this stage. Now, we're going to cover off some tips about how to deal with it in a minute. But ironically, you don't want to have to deal with it. And I think that's the crux of the situation, don't you?
Yeah. And that's really where it comes down to is, and this is the same thing that happens with the salespeople. So it's fascinating because the same advice, the same strategies, the same things that we work on with salespeople is the same thing that usually can be and should be or needs to be applied to the managers, the leaders, the team leads, the trainers, like everybody, is a lot of times, you know, companies hire a salesperson and just assume they should know, right? Because we can see the matrix. We assume everyone can see the matrix. Well, the challenge is that they haven't learned to see the matrix, right? Like, so they just don't. And then it will click, right? And that's what you're talking about. So same thing with the managers. It's that same, what you would do for your salespeople, you want to make sure you do up the chain. But again, this is where we both see organizations do it all the time, which is, you were a good salesperson. I promoted you. You should know how to lead them into battle. Same principles apply. Just get these 10 people to close deals and win the game. Like, that's it. Yeah. Just go do it. But it's a different skill, right? If you want managing, that's one thing. If you want leading, that's a different thing. Depends on what they're doing. So I think that's some of it, is first assessing and understanding, are you giving that person, that lead manager, supervisor, all the resources that they need to be successful, to unlock that competent consciousness, and then the unconscious competence where it's just autopilot for them because they just got it. Are you giving them all those resources? And if the answer to that is no, then you cannot blame them for their lack of success, right? Because the point of this is how to manage the managers who aren't managing. But if they're not managing because you haven't set them up to win, then whose fault is that?
Yeah. And nobody likes to be set up to fail. That's anybody at any level, FYI. And I think that's the key takeaway on that one. Okay, right. So look, let's say we're in this situation. Let's say we are dealing with a manager that is not managing. And we'll start kind of on the front line. So let's start with a team leader or a supervisor or a team manager. Okay. So these guys have a bunch of salespeople working for them. Okay. Now, the company identifies that the manager is not managing the team. Now, this can be for a mixture of reasons. One, they're either not hitting the KPIs. Two, the manager is letting people get away with things. For example, their productivity is off or their lateness is off. It can be any wide range of things. Mm-hmm. But this is a frontline level. Now, we know that we either need to train this person or we need to kind of manage this person. Now, you would expect at a certain level, when you step away from the front line, when you become that manager, when you become that supervisor, you become the company because you have to toe the company line. You're a different person now. You know, your peer group has changed, your background has changed, but we need to go in there as a operations manager or as the sales manager that has those individual teams reporting into them. And you have to pull this one person up. You need to approach it in a very different way because this is your sales team. You could kill morale at this point. You could destroy the team if they're already slightly on the edge. What advice would you give somebody on the approach of how to make sure that you do this the right way? And I'm not asking about the specifics about how you converse with them, but how would you approach this sales manager to have the initial conversation to say, hey, you are not managing your team effectively? What would you do? I'm putting you on the spot with that one.
Yeah, I love it. And I'm going to answer that question by not answering that question because, you know, we're salespeople, so we just don't answer questions. So here's my actual answer to that question, which is usually tough because this step has already been missed. If you want to manage people effectively, which is what we talked about, the salespeople as well. And I keep bringing this up because literally it's the same things that you would want to do with them that you would do with your managers, is you have to set the right expectations up front. Right. When you're talking about that tardiness or people getting away with things on the operational side or missing the quota, the KPIs, what needs to happen when that person is moved up or into that new role is they need to understand what's important and why. Right. All the expectations need to be set because it is very ineffective. Let's say 3 months, 6 months later, if nothing was set as far as the value and the importance of all the things that are required, to then come to that person and say, hey, by the way, you have an attendance problem. And, you know, what are you going to do to fix it? Or you're now in trouble. It's like, well, that's not fair. I didn't know. Right. So the first thing is you've always got to set those parameters. And I think that's really what helps a lot is where you say, this is important. And here is why it's important. And the reason why it's important is for this, this, and this, right? It's super critical. And this is the part that a lot of people in sales don't understand until they move up in the organization, is they don't understand the business side of everything involved with running a sales organization or a call center. salespeople think, give me more leads, give me all the good leads, stop giving me crappy leads, stop giving me the crappy shift, stop giving me the desk that's got the slow internet because that's killing my productivity. Put me at the desk near the good leads, wherever those come into the building, whatever that looks like. Super side note, because I've been accused of that as a salesperson, that I sat closer to the internet. So I had all the good leads first. And so, looking at all that, salespeople are just thinking about themselves, their productivity, their income, their job security. They don't understand the business. They don't understand what it means to have people who are late, especially if you're driving inbound calls and calls are being missed. What does that mean to the company? Like, what are the costs associated? Like, what's the business of running the business? That's where really need to spend more time with managers if they understand, like, this is what this means from a business perspective. Each seat needs to produce X number of dollars of revenue per day or we're losing, right? Like this is the break even for that seat every day. And I've done that calculation with call centers before. It's like this seat needs to produce $247 a day. That's it. If it doesn't, we're losing. If it does, we're winning. And so a lot of salespeople don't understand that. And your job is to help the managers understand it. So did that answer any of your question, and or what are your thoughts on that?
Hey, it's Oliver Catt of Cutter and Catt, and we'll be right back to the podcast. But first, are you ready to help build up the confidence of your call center team so that they can scale and generate more revenue? In our experience, there are many factors that could be keeping your sales operation from achieving the success that you want. The first step to creating call center confidence is to determine the gaps between where you are now and where you would like to be. If you're ready to find out how we can help your sales operation, whether it's anything from training to systems, technology, outsourcing, or anything else in between, email info@callcenterconfidence.com and we'll set up a free assessment call to find out how we may be able to help. Now back to Jason and I chatting about call centers.
It did, 100%. I love the way you went with that. And I've also now got a million other questions that I want to ask from that. But I love Ryan's point there is you can't deposit excuses. And I completely agree.
You have to cash them. You have to cash them and run.
100%. 100%. Look, I think you're right with the setting their expectations, leading it from the front, telling them as they go and where they hit and where they go from that. I think my view and my standpoint on this is you have to also set the manager's expectations that they're being managed at the same time, because I think there can sometimes be that misalignment. And what I mean by misalignment is I live by this one sentence as well. I've got so many one sentences that I live by, is compromise once, compromise for life. And the fact is, if you're letting your team get away with stuff, how are you ever going to bring it back around to kind of make sure they're either disciplined or they're put back in their spot? Now, what I mean by that is you then realize your manager needs to be managed when you are seeing constant attendance issues or you're not seeing that $247 a day being generated on a regular basis. So then as a manager, do you set your expectations with that manager who's not managing to say, hey, I'm reining you in on your KPIs now? The fact is your team's punctuality and attendance should be at 95%, but for the last 2 months, it's been running at 90%. Therefore, your productivity is impacted. Therefore, your cost per seat's been impacted. Or do you throw it on that manager last minute and pull him in the office and say, hey, you should be watching your own stats? Where do you put the monkey? Do you put the monkey on their shoulder to know their own stats? Or as the manager's manager, do you think they should be constantly on the manager's back? What do you think about that?
I think it depends on where that individual is in the organization. So we kind of talked about this, I know, in one of the weeks in the past, and I think this is really important. If somebody's a team lead, supervisor, whatever that label would be, meaning they have a small team that they're with and potentially responsible for their own production, then they shouldn't necessarily be watching all those KPIs and numbers. They should be aware of them. They should know what's important, but they should also not be responsible for managing to it or tracking those, because they are literally in the trench fighting the war with their people, and they need to be focused on that. They are literally there, and they need to, they can't be stuck in admin hell, email hell. Like, they need to just be there right along with their team fighting the good fight. as you move up the organization, then people should know, right? Whatever that next manager up, they should know the numbers, they should be held to it, and they should know what they're responsible for, and that it's not a surprise when somebody comes for them. But again, I think it's relative to their position.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Rich makes a very good point there, which I don't know if we're going to get the whole thing on screen. But he says, many people in our industry are promoted from the frontline agents. It is the senior manager's responsibility to coach and develop those individuals in their journey into and through management. Everyone has to learn. The question is, who is there to support them in the learning journey? Now, again, Rich, you just hit a big note for Jason and I. It's something that we're very passionate about. It's something that we've spoken about every other episode, I'd imagine, about people not receiving the training or learning and development that they're supposed to receive. I even think, if I remember correctly, I put it out a few hours ago, but my post on LinkedIn this morning, not to plug my own post, by the way, but was about companies hiring managers externally. They leave because they're not the right cultural fit. Then they go internal. Then they leave because they've not been given the training. And then they're back in that vicious cycle again. Well, do we go external because of the trust? Do we go internal because of this? There's so many different things out there. And again, Rich, managers who don't manage my eyesight today is gone. I'm handing over to you, Jason.
All right. Well, you know, I think the biggest thing in answering a question you had a minute ago is who's responsible. Like if that manager is not doing their job, right, that person in that leadership role, who is responsible? Is it them? Is it fall on the manager up? I think if the expectation has been set, right, like you work for me and I've set the expectation, I've laid out the ground rules, I've laid out the accountability, you know what you need to measure and manage to. And you don't do it, and I support you, and I can say I've given you all the tools, the training, the time, the effort that I can, then that's on you. However, and just like with salespeople, right? If I've done everything for a salesperson and they still don't get it and they still can't close deals, at the end of the day, can I say I did my part? Well, it's on them. Same thing when you're in sales, when you're working with a potential customer. If you can say at the end, like, I didn't get that deal closed, but I did everything I could and I went as far as I could, like literally gave everything I could to that and you didn't close it, then that's okay. You're not going to get them all. I think the issue is that when managers, again, are abdicating leadership to other people and assuming someone else should know how to manage and they're not, then that falls on the next person up as it's their responsibility and their fault for why things aren't going well, right? Yeah. Like it depends on how much being done. And then Rich threw in, we can't promote our employee and just leave them to it. It needs to involve leadership. And that is the fundamental thing that organizations, if they can get that one thing, it will shift things so much.
Oh, 100%. 100%. And that is what makes the difference between, you know, somebody with mediocre and somebody with excellent training. And it also shows in the results of the team at the end of the day, whether it's CX, whether it's sales, whether it's technical support or any of those call center environments. At the end of the day, you will see the difference when somebody has had the training and the support to deliver that. And it also, I think it also boils down to companies that I've worked with before, where I think, you know, they have in-house trainers, but the in-house trainers don't always, and I know we're going off on a topic here, but in-house trainers don't always have the skill set they need to train managers when they're promoted into the role. Mm-hmm. And for me, my gut on that I've seen in all the companies that I've worked for is those trainers have been hired as product trainers or sales trainers or induction trainers, because that's the company need. That's what you need to get your company up and running. The problem you have is when you need to implement something of a niche or something of a specific area. You know, when somebody says, hey, I need something on negotiation skills. Well, hang on a minute, I'm a sales trainer. All right, yeah, but you negotiate in sales. Yeah, but I need just negotiation skills. Not everybody has that training because they know how to counteract sales. Again, it should be part and parcel of it, but where do we go for these niche areas. I was just going to say, let's just call us. But, you know, that's where we go with that one. And again, Rich, tongue twister special this week. Honestly, I don't even know what I'm saying today, Rich. I've had coffee. I think I need something stronger, you know, and this is just water.
But, you know. Well, and I think as far as being able to train those things, you know, it's really assessing the organization, what you have, who you have on the bench, who's available. If you have a trainer who's been brought in to do sales training or whatever the training is, and they've never managed or led or managed at that level, then how are they going to be able to train, right? That goes back to what we talked about in the training session, which is to be an effective trainer, do you have to have done the job, right? Which I think both of us agree, like if you want to be a sales trainer, you should have sold it. You should know sales, right? Like not just the theory of sales, but like actually mostly have done it too. Same thing with leadership is that if you're going to train somebody on how to be an effective leader, manager, supervisor, VP of sales, director, then it's got to be somebody who has the experience and the coaching training mentality. Because again, this goes back to what we talked about before. Just because somebody is good at it or has done it before doesn't mean they're going to be a good teacher of it or a mentor or a coach. We see that all the time. So I think that's one of the keys. And when we get to this, the kind of refocus on this managing managers who don't manage, let's say that the organization has done everything they could, right? Maybe it's time for this manager to be put on some kind of PIP, performance improvement plan. What do you see as effective or some general strategies or even like thought processes an organization should go through or follow in a situation like this?
So there's a couple of elements here that I would throw in. I think the first one is, you know, I mean, first and foremost, guys, a lot of people want to do this. They want to pull their leader in. They want to have an informal conversation, first of all. Jason, I think this is a point brought up by you last week when we were talking about PIPs. And I want to use this again today because I think this is a very valid point is don't just let HR get on with it. And this goes for anybody out there who's putting a manager in this kind of situation. If you're going to have a conversation, if you're going to identify a manager that you need to pull up, because your manager is not performing. This is a difficult task. It's an awkward conversation because they're in an environment where they're a manager. You know, I'm not on the phones. I'm not managed like these other people. Technically you are because you're managed on managing these guys. Your KPIs are the business KPIs that are filtered down. So yes, whilst you're not selling, yes, whilst you're not being managed on your productivity, you've still got other areas and this is where you can let the wider team down. So for me, it's about keeping it in-house. It's working with the team directly. Yes, you have to get HR involved, but you have to be prepared for a very awkward conversation about pulling a manager up because you've promoted somebody to a management role because they're good at what they do. They toe the company line. They believe in your company's ethos, their values, whatever it is they may have. You're not disciplining, but you're pulling somebody up on the fact that they're not doing well in their job. Now, again, we're not saying you haven't supported them because obviously you not supporting them is a whole other conversation, but they're not doing their job. And you see it. And a couple of things that I want to point out is if they're a newly appointed manager, if there's somebody fresh into the role, there are a couple of things you have to look out for. And this is first and foremost, unfortunately, we've all gone through it. And I will hold my hands up. The first time I ever got promoted into a team leader role, you get a bit of an ego. You get a bit of a swag. You know, it happens. People go on the power trip. I think that's a big identifier, first of all. And again, teams see it, but they don't expect their manager's manager to see it. And as a team member, if you're not being managed effectively or you're not being managed the way that you think you should be managed, there can be some big inter-team issues that kind of develop and evolve off of the back of it. So I think it's important to stay mindful and focused that whenever you're putting somebody in this role, internal, external, whoever it is, you're watching them closely to start with. And then as time goes by, you can kind of let that go as you believe trust and faith and everything else kind of comes into that person. I think that's a big front topic on that, Jason. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, you just got to be aware of human behavior. I think one of the big things too that kind of ties into this is I think it's always important to when selecting your manager, especially from when promoting from within, is that you look at them as an employee and what patterns they have and what their metrics are in all categories, and then also be aware of that and ensure that you're not moving somebody up who has attendance problems, right? Or behavior problems. It's like, oh, they're really good at sales, I'm going to move them into a manager. That should fix it. Once they're a manager, their attendance problems will go away. Maybe, maybe not, right? Like it shouldn't be a surprise. But yeah, I mean, like Rich said, you know, the pre-pips is all about how, you know, being constructive, supportive, giving them guidance. We talked about that last week, especially, which is a good reminder about, you know, the pip should be seen as that positive, like we want to get you back on track, not a, hey, here's this thing, you have X number of weeks to figure it out or else, because then that's a dangerous thing. But I think, yeah, you have to make sure it's set up. And then I think the biggest things when, you know, having that pip conversation is, again, it shouldn't be a surprise. It should never be a blindside, no matter what level somebody's at. It shouldn't be a, hey, by the way, your team is failing. Like they should know if they're winning or not well before the conversation needs to have. And there's some kind of document they need to sign that says, like, you need to get back on track or here's the consequence. So I think that's a key. And then I think it's about setting the right time. That's the challenging thing with managers. If you put a manager on a pip, which is so tough to do, and a lot of organizations just don't want to do it for various reasons, which we can talk about. But then it's like, how long? How long do you give that manager to right the ship before it's still about them? And again, which parts can they control and which parts can they not control?
And I think a very valid point off the back of that is that's where, you know, weekly meetings with your managers really come into effect. Now, I've worked with companies that, what do you mean weekly meetings? Well, you sit down with your sales leaders, right? And you go through stats, KPIs, you know, targets, objectives, where the team are, making sure that everybody's on track. Well, you know, we sit down once a month and we go through it and we just make sure that we're, no. Weekly meetings help with what Jason's trying to achieve here or trying to explain, in a sense that, you know, you have the ability to address any issue. So when they come into that meeting, they come in with the previous week's stats covering everything from a managerial level that you need to know as an operational lead. Because then that way you could turn around and go, Jason, look, I'm noticing four of your team are not turning up on time and you're not even hitting numbers. What's going on there? That's bang. That's your pre-pip conversation. That's the direction where we go in there. And if that happens 2, 3, 4 times in a row, you then have the gravitas to put somebody on one of these documents or to put somebody on a development plan. It's an awkward conversation to have, but you know, that's the kind of nature of the beast. You know, Rich here is saying, you know, glide path succession planning is effective for motivation and prep for the next level. 100%. Okay. And obviously with the follow-up of, with the required training, of course. Yeah, 100%. But with all of this, you can start to build that with your team in these meetings. So if you're having these weekly meetings, you're building your succession plans, you're making sure that they're ready for the next step. You know, your job as a senior manager, whether it is operations, call center manager, C-suite, VO, or VR, whatever, VP, wherever you are, is everybody should be looking to the next level. Everybody should be building to the next level. And how do you do that? And if you're doing that in your meetings and you're getting somebody prepared, you're also training and developing at the same time. It's a great cycle to be in if you have the time to do it. I was chatting with a new VP a few months back, and out of their 40-hour week, they told me that they probably spent maybe 2 hours with the team. 2 hours of a 40-hour week with the team. Now, don't get me wrong, they were being pulled into meetings, they were being pulled into client pitches, they were being pulled into all of this stuff. But where do you have the time to sit down with your sales managers, your sales leaders and everything else, or your other members of senior management to find out if their team are actually providing, actually delivering? And that's nothing wrong, because time management, unfortunately, in this day and age, especially if you're in the BPO industry, you know, nobody has time in the BPO industry. You know, you blink and you miss your week, it's gone. But even in-house to an extent. And I think looking at how you manage your time will allow you to manage your team effectively. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. And I think a lot of that, again, comes into understanding as a manager or leader what your priorities are and where your focus should be in the org, right? So that VP of sales, depending on the size of the organization, they're obviously doing higher level strategy stuff, 10, 15,000 foot, you know, kind of strategy things. And obviously spending some time with their leaders, not necessarily the direct team, but their leaders. And is it enough? And the proof is in the results, right? That really comes down to how is the team doing? If they're doing well, then that's great. If they're not doing well and you're only spending 2 hours a week, well, then maybe that's the issue. Maybe they need more attention, support, mentoring, coaching. And I think that's one of the parts that's really important, is to look at how is the team doing? How is that manager doing? And again, this goes back to, are you giving them everything that you can, or are you making them just figure it out on their own? On a completely different topic, and this is where, you know, it gets interesting. And so I just want to put this out there and then see where this conversation goes with us. When we're talking about managing managers who don't manage, and the, like the PIP and then the pre-PIP, and then like, how do you get them to do what they do? Here's the biggest thing I've seen, the biggest challenge I've seen with managing salespeople and managing sales leaders, managers, supervisors, okay, is that somebody who's good at sales is always selling. And when they're a manager, they're going to always be selling and explaining why it's not their fault, why they need more of this, why they need more of that. And it's tough to manage salespeople who can't or don't turn that off, right? Mm-hmm. And they're going to sell you on why it's not their fault, right? Like, you know, always be like, there's a sale made every time, right? Either I'm selling you or you're selling me on why you're not going to buy. That's what it's like managing salespeople. And then also managers. And so one of the biggest challenges for leading sales managers is getting them to stop the selling you process. Stop selling me on why this isn't your fault. Stop selling me on why it's the economy or the taxes or HR's fault or ops fault or the leads or, you know, the TVs aren't new enough. Like, I stop selling me on why those things are. Like, turn that part off so that we can have a leadership discussion. Have you seen that where before, Oliver, as you're sitting there laughing?
Far too often. Far, honestly, yeah. It goes back to the excuses comment from Ryan earlier. I'm not saying I've heard it all, because I guarantee I'll still hear something new tomorrow. But the excuses every day, just sitting down with people. But it does. It starts on the front line. As you say, you know, the leads aren't good enough. Oh, look, you know, you're sending me this demographic where I should be selling to this demographic. What do they say? A bad workman always blames his tools, right?
Right.
And yeah, and I think that's it. I love the TVs aren't new enough comment. I've never heard that one. So that's
I once had a manager who said, well, we don't have TVs in the office like the other one does, and that's why we're not closing more deals. And then we got TVs, and then it's like, hey, well, the other office has artwork and we don't. We feel like nobody cares about us. So if we had artwork, you know, okay, here's artwork. Yeah. Now, why aren't you closing deals? And I think it's so important, especially I see this a lot with owners, especially small organizations. They believe it all because it's so convincing. So buy that manager's sales pitch about what would really help the organization, instead of everyone stepping back and being truly accountable and differential to, like, okay, where is the issue? Because sometimes it is the leads. right? Sometimes you do need TVs and gamification to help support the team.
100%. Right?
But there's also a line where it's like, okay, but is everyone doing what they should be doing? And so I think that's a one thing to always keep in mind is managers, good salespeople who don't turn it off will always be trying to sell you out of their predicament.
Yeah. No, I can agree with that. I can agree with that. And I think, like I say, it's finding that happy medium, whether you want somebody to do it or not. And again, you know, when you find that sales manager who does that, they will give you every excuse under the sun, which is why everyone out there today, Jason and I have been pounding the drum with stats, KPIs, evidence, measuring, tactics. Go in there with information. Go into that meeting, go into that conversation, that weekly meeting with as much info as possible, because then that way nobody can pull any wool over your eyes. Nobody can say, hey, I need new TVs. No one can say, hey, we need to buy more data. And if you are worried that you're going to put a manager on a pip because, you know, they're saying their data is bad and that's why, you know, their sales numbers are down. So you can assume, okay, so if the sales numbers are down, we're going to get the bad. We're going to get the dialer doesn't always work. We're going to get, we're phoning at the wrong time or phoning the wrong demographic. If you can cover off and go to your data guy, go to your data sets and say, hey, right, look, tell me, validate this data. Then you know you can have those conversations. And as a manager's manager, if you know what you're talking about, if you haven't just blagged your way in it or sold your way into that role, then you should be able to go in there with as much information as possible and not sit there and go, oh, okay, yeah, no, I'll go and check the data. Because then you lose credibility as a manager.
Yeah, because what doesn't work, which I see a lot, which is the manager's manager sits down with the manager and says, your team's not closing enough deals. I got it right. Do you like that? It says, you're not closing enough deals. What's going on? Like, what is it going to take for you to close more deals? And just with that one metric, well, what do you like? Then it just becomes this sales battle back and forth. I think one other thing before we wrap this up today is let's chat real quick about why companies hesitate with managing their managers, which in my experience is usually the same reason they hesitate in overly managing salespeople or holding them accountable, which is, what are they going to do if they do put that manager on a pip and then they do have to let that manager go? Now, what the hell are they going to do? Yeah. Right. And so I see a lot of organizations who tolerate managers, leaders, team leads, supervisors, just like they tolerate mediocre salespeople, because it's either that mediocre manager or no manager. And then what? Right.
So I'm going to say one thing, and I don't know whether it's going to be liked. I don't know whether it's going to be disagreed on. But what's the lesser of two evils? Would you rather have a manager that is sucking the energy out of your sales team because, you know, they're either on a power trip, they're not performing, they're not managing them properly, they're not managing them effectively because of this pip or whatever it might be, and you've got to let them go? But and I'm going to jump back to a comment that Ryan and Rich have both made a minute ago on this. Would you rather have a manager that is destroying something, or would you rather have a gap that you can jump in and help and advise and support as a senior manager until you can find the right candidate to go in there? I know personally, I would rather roll my sleeves up, lose the manager on the front line and go in there and go, hey, look, I'm going to put some more hours in because I know we're going to turn more money over if I go in there and help them. And that's not to say that, you know, just because I'm the captain of the ship, I should do everything. In the back end, I'm still going to be looking for a replacement. I'm still going to be looking for somebody to jump in. But if I've had to get rid of them because of, and I want to touch on this comment here that was made a few moments ago, feedback from the sales team to the manager's manager is just as important as feedback from a manager to their manager. So jumping that, and then Rich backing that up with 360-degree rotational feedback at all levels, or the most important one, which is skip-level feedback. The reason why I bring that up is because what if you've got to get rid of this person because their team have said, hey, this manager or your subordinate, my manager in the middle, is creating a living nightmare for all of us. That's why we're not performing. That's why we're struggling. And as that important feedback goes through the channels, you've got to realize it, that if it is resonating and you're seeing the results at the same time as you're getting this feedback, then you do have to do something about it. And I know this is a long-winded way of answering your question. I would rather have the gap 100% all the way forward, and I would put the hours in to backfill somebody and then train somebody to do that. And I have this conversation with somebody going, you know, well, you know, it's easier for me to do the work every day than to get somebody else to do it. Well, hang on a minute. Put in the extra couple of hours, train somebody to do what you do, and then step back. And then you have that overarching view of what's going on. That's my two cents.
Yeah. And I think if we look at that VP example of what you said, where they're giving 2 hours a week to their team, and then the rest of their week is to the whatever else they're doing, the challenge is to say, okay, I barely am allotting 2 hours a week. How am I now going to run a team and then also find a replacement and yeah. then coach and manage and mentor that replacement? Like, it's just, you know, rather just leave this Band-Aid on this gunshot wound and just hope that we get through this thing instead yeah. of actually doing something about it. And that's obviously the real world battle that leaders face, which is, I know I should replace this person, but like literally we can't stop this bus right now because it would disrupt. But you're right. In my experience, the answer still is it doesn't matter. More damage is being done to the organization yeah. because of that person. Now, obviously, we're talking about extreme situations where someone's just completely ineffective. The whole team is not winning, not succeeding, but you've got to make that decision and replace that person. I mean, it's yeah. like Rich just put in there, never ignore the issue. If you ignore it, it's not going to work. Now, if you need some time to find that replacement and you're going to let them limp along, maybe, and I think that might be okay, but that's really where you're using that PIP time frame to give yourself the time to let them win or not, but then while yeah. you're also working on your plan, which interestingly enough, I didn't plan it this way, but it works out well, is the next week, what we're going to talk about is what Rich actually mentioned earlier, which is the succession plans, progression plans. He said glide path, where it's like, okay, because here's one of the biggest things. We talked about this in training. I talk about this all the time with leaders. They understand, but they never thought of in this terms, which is the biggest thing that should keep you up at night as a leader, as an executive, as a business owner, keep you up at night is what happens if fill in the blank person in my team doesn't show up tomorrow, is yep. sick, goes to jail again, right? Like we've all seen those, has a family emergency and needs to leave, right? You know, these days gets COVID and has to quarantine for 2 weeks. What do you do? What do you do when that's your manager? And now you have a problem,
yeah.
right? And so how do you plan ahead? How do you play chess instead of checkers in your organization to ensure that you are the prisoners are not running the prison, right? Like that's the big key you want to get away from and such that you're leading it. So good place to stop. That's what we're going to cover next week. This has been fun. Thanks everybody for engaging, interacting, all the messages. If you're watching this in the replay, what's cool too is you can also chat in the replay, Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn. You can chat in there. We see those chats as well. So we can chat back, you know, give your feedback. It's always fun on the replay also.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And just one final comment on all of that. For anybody who's thinking, how am I going to fill this gap? My final approach to every single one of you that worries about, do you know what? If I need to fill this hole, what am I going to do with the rest of my duties? The same thing here applies to you. What if you want to take a week off vacation? Mm-hmm. Right? It's the same thing. So tell the business you're taking a week off, fill the gap, recruit someone, train them in that week off, and then go back in. That's the simple way to put it. I know it's not that simple in every industry. But if you do that, honestly, the rewards will pay itself out 100%. But yeah, it's been a great day, Jason. As always, some bombs dropped. As always, check out the podcast, check out the website, callcenterconfidence.com, spelled the American way, UK way to come soon. Podcasts are live, Instagram's live, socials are live. We are here. You can contact us many, many ways, especially info@callcenterconfidence.com. Jason, been a pleasure as always. Thank you very much. And as you said, we got a few bombs next week, right?
Yes, it's going to be great. Super exciting. As always, this is a blast. Lots of value, everybody. Make sure to check out the podcast on all the locations. We're also going to get the transcripts up there. So if you'd rather read through these as you're going through it, and there's some stuff that you want to get and take from this and put into your organization, the transcripts will be available as well. But that's it. We will see you next Wednesday, same time, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. For Oliver's band over in the UK. And that's it. And thanks again, Oliver, and everybody who tuned in. We'll catch you all next week.
Thanks so much for tuning into this episode of the Call Center Confidence Show with Cutter and Kat. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. We really appreciate that effort. For more info about the show, you can always go to www.callcenterconfidence.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.